Drew Allen, the host of the Drew Allen Show podcast and writer for American Greatness and PJ Media and all the usual conservative suspects.
I see. Well, I didn't realize that you had a conservative bend to your podcast and writing. And let's get into that in just a second here. But first of all, the podcast. Give your podcast a plug, man. What is it you do? Who's your target audience? And what kind of stuff do you talk about?
Yeah, well, my target audience is really kind of millennials. You know, I'm about to turn 35, and you know, I've kind of made it my objective to really rally young people and get through some of the indoctrination and get them to ask questions and not just take everyone's word as it is, whether it's on, you know, whether it's CNN or Fox or whatever it is. And I'm a proud conservative, and I promote conservative values and ideals because I think those are the tried and true principles that have made this country the greatest nation in the history of the world. But that's my primary audience. And I started the podcast really, and it's just me. I don't have guests on the show. I mean, unless somebody really big wants to come on or it's going to suit something that I really want to talk about, I try to just keep it my show, because what I do is, you know, I do 7 or 8 radio or TV interviews a week. So, you know, I fill time for a lot of people to talk about these issues. And so I like to just do it myself on my own show. And also, you know, I started out as a writer, so I'm a columnist. I've written a book as well. And so I write, you know, weekly articles in American Greatness, PJ Media. What are some of the other ones? I mean, pretty much anywhere where more conservative writers go to, that's where my stuff is published. But, you know, I'm not a super fast writer. I do a lot of due diligence in terms of, even though I'm an op-ed writer, you know, I do my due diligence to study the issues and the facts. And sometimes, you know, I could spend a whole day working on an article that's got to be 850 words or less, talking about one topic more or less. And so I've got a lot more to say than that. And so it's a more efficient use of my time to really get through to people and talk about these issues, just doing like I'm doing now with you, to just do word of mouth.
We're going to talk about the Canadian trucker issue in just a moment here, as you've been following that and you've got some opinions and some facts on that. But I did want to ask you about the word conservative, because I'm in my 40s and you're in your 30s. And I've been one to be very upfront with people that I do The Crude Life, which is a non-political oil and gas show. We also do another program called the United Podcast of America, where we actually interview other podcasters as our news correspondents, because those are the ones that do the best due diligence. I understood that during the blog revolution, because I was a writer like you, and when the blog revolution came, I got very sensitive, because I would say, I'm not a blogger, I'm a writer, and I would be all snooty and everything like that. When this podcast revolution came, I didn't care. I was like, as a talk show host and as a writer, whatever, the more the merrier, come to the party and let's play. But what I found during the blog revolution was that a lot of bloggers were very good researchers. And there were some good writers, great op-ed writers too, the ones that hung with it. So I really like your path in terms of, not like, I connect with your path. That's a more appropriate word. Like is a polarizing term, but conservative. Okay, so getting back to that, the whole conservative. Boy, this is a really long question. Sorry about that. I come from that Barry Goldwater conservative age where government, stay out of my checkbook and stay out of my pocketbook, and we'll get along great. Here's some money for roads. Here's some money for the police. Don't get too policey, but, you know, we'll take some good laws, that type of thing. Nowadays, that type of conservative is almost considered a libertarian.
Yeah, in many ways. I think it's unfortunate. I think that really the left in this country, the Democratic Party, and of course, the mainstream media, you know, they've really done a disservice to labeling what conservatism is. They don't understand what it is because they're not conservative. And unfortunately, I think there's a lot of confusion out there about what it really means. And from my perspective, you know, what conservatism really is, I mean, yes, it's Reaganism. It's the Barry Goldwater era as well. And conservative principles are those proven principles that are responsible for making America this greatest nation in the history of mankind. You know, small governments, you know, an embrace of the Constitution and an embrace of history. an embrace of the real value of the revolutionary principles of this country, which say that we, the people, are the master and those in government are our servants. And, you know, we conservatives believe, of course, yes, the government should stay in its lane as is described and enumerated in the Constitution. And that we believe in responsibility, in liberty, in the individual rights. You know, we don't have collective rights in this country. We have individual rights. And we believe in the, you know, we have a very optimistic view of mankind. I don't claim to know better than someone else how they should live their life. I believe that's up to them. I believe that mistakes are going to be made and must be made. And it's not the government's business or anyone else's business to dictate to someone else how they live their lives. In fact, conservatism is really a rejection of what the plantation mentality was in the slave era in this country, which was to say that, you know, we, the plantation owner, or we, the white people, for example, you know, we believe that the slave is better off and happier in a system in which their lives are run by others. We reject that. And we want to uplift everyone. And so conservatism really is a very positive thing, and it's proven to be a successful model.
That was one of the things I used to laugh about when, like, you know, you put Ron Paul next to Bernie Sanders. It's like those two are closer than people think. They're just taking different roads. It's so funny how it can, when you kind of look at some of the intention behind what they're doing, you know, like, when you talk about the conservatism, all I kept hearing was accountability. Kept hearing was accountability. And some people just are not accountable. And so, you know, that's where the two-party system, I thought, came from, was there are those people that are accountable and there are those people that are unaccountable. And unfortunately, the unaccountable people need to be taken care of by the accountable people. And we've really gotten far away from that. Just noise in between and all that other stuff. I don't want to get too existential here before we lose everybody, but because sometimes I find people don't like intelligent critical thinking.
Well, you know, and that's on both sides of the aisle. I mean, even when you look at writing articles and things like that, I think the brevity of the articles is fine. It's important to be able to get your point across in 800, 850 words. But at the same time, we live in a culture where people really aren't that interested in reading. You know, it's just a headline culture. It's just looking for talking points. And there's not a lot of critical thinking. And that's really what's wrong with the country, I think, right now, is we haven't taught young people to question things and to think critically. It's just to regurgitate what someone else has said. And if you're watching the news, there are people you may agree with. There are people you may disagree with, but at the end of the day, that's just someone else talking. And on my podcast too, I say, look, I do the research and work, and I don't try and hide who I am or what my opinions are or what my point of view is. But, you know, look, don't take my word for it. Go and look this stuff up yourself, you know, because I got to my opinion because I research and I study.
Let's get to the meat here, the meat and potatoes. And then I do want to ask you about climate change as well with your generation. Since you are from Texas, you live in California, and you follow life. So I do want to ask you that as well. But what we're talking about today is the trucker boycott or strike, or there's something going on in Canada. And I'll be honest, I do not know much about it except for social media. I've only seen pictures and kind of some comments in social media, and the pictures are amazing and the videos are amazing. So I don't really kind of even know what's going on. So would you kind of help me out and just give me a quick overview of what is the issue right now up in Canada?
So the issue in Canada is the same issue that people are protesting against pretty much throughout the world, but there hasn't been a movement so big, a protest movement so big as we're seeing in Canada, and they're really leading the way. It really comes down to a liberty versus tyranny, and a lot of it goes to the vaccine mandates. It goes to vaccine passports, and this idea that the government has sought to fundamentally transform the way we view our relationship with the government. And that's to believe that our rights are no longer unalienable. They are dependent upon getting a shot for COVID. And it's absolutely wrong. It's medical tyranny in many ways. And what's powerful about these Canadian truckers is that something like 90% of them have actually gotten vaccinated. And so it's not just about the fact that they don't want to get vaccinated. It's the idea behind forcing someone, compelling something to do something against their own will, their own judgment, in order to live their lives. And that's what this movement boils down to. And of course, it gets into a bigger movement, too, of these government officials who have no accountability, who condescend and have no respect at all for the citizens they're supposed to be serving. And these people are acting like kings and queens and monarchs, which in this country and also Canada, you know, we have thrown away that system long ago. And that's really the crux of this. And I think what this is showing is how powerful the people are. That the only power that these tyrants in government have, the only power they have, they realize it's derived from this myth that we believe that they try and convince us that those in the tyrannical government, for example, these tyrants, that they represent the majority, but they don't. They try. That's why they've been labeling this movement, 50,000 truckers, so many people. They try and label it a fringe minority, but it's not a fringe minority. It's a majority. And the government does not want people to wake up and realize that actually we have all the power and we outnumber them 100,000 to 1. And that's why they continue on this quest to continue to demonize this movement. And yet there's been no violence whatsoever. And you contrast this movement, which is peaceful, to the movements of like Black Lives Matter or Antifa, which are radical leftist groups that do represent truly a minority in society. But the media gives them cover, props them up. And they endorse those movements and they're violent movements while they condemn this peaceful movement that actually has a basis, a rational basis, a principled basis.
I haven't seen much. Now, okay, I got rid of my television in 2006. So I do not get a lot of 24-hour, you know, mainstream news. I don't get commercials. I don't get the Sunday morning stuff. I wanted my son to be raised in an environment without TV. Now, we do stream. We're not Amish. So we do have, you know, we had Netflix back in the day and the bootleg Fire Stick with the Romanian websites. You can download stuff and that sort of thing. So we do stay connected to pop culture that way. But honestly, we don't have the 24-hour news networks on. So I don't know any of this stuff that's going on. And I kind of like it that way because I like interviewing you and the actual newsmakers, you know, the experts, the people who are writing the papers and the due diligence and that sort of thing. So when I see this, I've been asking around and I've been looking around. I haven't seen much on this at all. Is the mainstream media covering this at all?
They're covering it, but the slant and the narrative that they are promoting is false. They're mischaracterizing the movement as a dangerous movement, as an anti-democracy movement, and it's none of those things. So they're covering it, but it's propaganda.
Okay, so the parts they are covering, it's a one-sided type of a thing. Maybe they might have the other side on one time out of 20 other sides, so I get how that game works. Okay, now I was aware of it on social media. Now, I also am quite aware that the social media this last couple weeks has become very active, banning and taking posts off that have anything to do with anti-vaccinations. And so is that playing into this at all that you're finding out with this protest? You mentioned the word vax cards and anti-vaccinations. And since I got aware of this over social media, and I know social media is becoming extremely censor happy with the vaccine stuff, Joe Rogan and Neil Young and everything else. Where are we at with that? Do you know?
Well, the most recent thing, Joe Rogan had another episode come out. And as I'm busy, I actually have never listened to an entire episode of Joe Rogan's show. He's a powerful voice. He's got 11 or 12 million listeners per episode. He's a giant. But I hear the snippets that are necessary in terms of understanding where he's at and the statements he's making. And, you know, the most recent thing is he had a comedian on, I think, and he had a conversation, and he said that he's the target, the victim of a political hit job, and that's exactly what this is. They want to silence free speech, and the truth is about Joe Rogan. This guy is somebody who is not a conservative. In fact, he most of his friends from the entertainment world are Democrats. I would bet that he has more Democrat friends than Republican friends. But what Joe Rogan is just a regular guy who asks questions. And kind of like you, he has experts on to talk about the issues, and he just delves deep into it for 2 or 3 hours. And the truth is, what they're accusing him of misinformation, for example, he has had, you know, Robert Malone, who is credited with inventing the technology that is responsible for giving us mRNA technology, which, of course, is the COVID vaccine, if you will. And that guy's not a schmuck. He's a brilliant guy. And the truth is, the misinformation that the Democrats continue to say, well, the things they label as misinformation are actually truth. You know, for example, in the beginning of this, you had Rachel Maddow and the Democrats saying that, you know, if you get this vaccine, the virus stops. You cannot get COVID. You cannot transmit COVID. Now we know that's not true. And so many of these people, for example, they've even kicked off Twitter for misinformation. It's been proven out that what they claimed was actually true and what the government was saying was false. And that's really the problem. And we have a First Amendment right. And the reality is, if you don't like Joe Rogan, you don't have to listen to Joe Rogan. If you don't like me or don't agree with me, you don't have to listen to me. But they don't want there to be any debate. They want to control the narrative completely because they want to control what we hear, what we believe. And the reality is that, you know, for most of these things, if you turn off the media like you do and you walk around, your experience is truth. Your experience is real. But when you turn on the TV, they are convincing you that what you see with your own eyes and ears is false. They're creating an alternate reality that isn't real.
You know what I found out, and this is no kidding. So what I found out when I eliminated television from my life was I became exponentially happier. I just did. The negativity was gone. You know, there wasn't some commercial telling me that I might have something wrong with me. Okay, there wasn't somebody from the news telling me that this is why I might have cancer or this and that. So that happened. That did happen. Now, there were other things that happened too because of that, though. Was all of a sudden, when I would go to dinner parties, life wasn't as bad as it used to be. And so when somebody would ask me, hey, how's things going? And, you know, I'd be like, hey, things are going good. People used to kind of be like, turned off because they want something negative. They want to talk negative. Well, now, over the last 5 years, initially when I first got rid of the TV, people were kind of like bored by me because, hey, life was going good. They wanted to dive into negative stuff. Over the last 5 years, people were getting mad at me. Like, what do you mean things are fine? And they just started like yelling at me for reasons why I shouldn't be in a good mood. And things like that. That's where I think we're at, where people are just angry, walking around, and they are experts on so many different things. And I'll give you another example. I'm a cancer survivor, and I had my own individual cancer battle. I fought the medical community for 6 years. They told me I had hemorrhoids and I had colon cancer. I turned out to be right. I was diagnosed stage 4. Then stage 2, now I'm cancer-free. I literally fought for my life. The worst part is I never even had hemorrhoids. So here, because of the checkbox medical system we live in, and you don't have a voice unless you're in the box, they told me one thing, the authority figure. And in the end, they were wrong, and I was right. I never got an apology. I never got nothing. All I got was, okay, I got to live. But they didn't treat me any different. I'll give you another example. So I'm driving to Cedar Rapids, Iowa, from North Dakota. I'm caught in the middle of a blizzard. Somebody calls me. I put it on speakerphone. And I can't even see like 5 feet ahead of me. I thought it was something, an emergency, or that's why I answered on speaker. Well, they're telling me that they're looking at a map that says, well, the roads say it's clear. I go, do you want me to take a picture? Like, I'm in the middle of a blizzard, and I'm getting in an argument about my reality because somebody who's not involved with my reality is looking at a screen. We are living in a very different time where those are the people that are in control of the money and the regulations. Do you know what I'm talking about, or am I just crazy?
No, I know exactly what you're talking about. you know, it goes back to what Reagan used to say, right? Trust but verify. It's people have given up their own penchant for rational thought, and they will adopt the views of somebody else over their own real life experience even. And that's the reality too. I mean, we've seen this with COVID, with masks. We know definitively that they don't work. The truth is the only one that can possibly do any good at all is an N95, not even the KN95. It's an N95 mask respirator. And that only works really in a surgical setting, you know, when it's fitted perfectly to your face. And we saw Florida lift all restrictions and mandates. We've seen Texas and other states do this, and they have fared no worse. And in fact, they've fared better than most of these blue states, like in California, where I am, which still have these mandates in place. And I just went to a wedding in Texas in Fort Worth. And, you know, the enjoyment that I had in my life was just so great. I mean, people wore masks if they wanted to, and most people did not. And life was completely normal and everyone was happy. And then I come back to California and you've got the masked Nazis and everyone else living in fear still. And the point is, if everyone were to go to Texas or Florida, and we know these, that's the thing too, right? These Democrats like in Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and others, they go on vacation in Florida, which they spend most of their time attacking because they don't have these regulations and mandates, and they go there to enjoy their lives. They don't obey the very mandates they put on us. And what does that tell you? What do they know that we don't? And the point is, though, if everyone was to go and have that experience in Florida or Texas, you'd realize that what the media was saying was simply not true. You're not going to croak, you know, drop dead on the street because you're in Florida or Texas.
And just to, I guess, go back to my cancer story quick, because I did forget to finish that up with my point, which was I was out one night and I got into kind of a little bit of an argument with an administrator of a healthcare profession because my story, they didn't like it because it went outside of what the protocols are supposed to be. So they were arguing that my individual story was wrong. They were trying to literally change my reality before my eyes in front of other people because my real life story did not match what they're told in their meetings should happen. That's a weird feeling to have, pal. And anyway, I just wanted to point that out before I get to the next topic, because we could stay on this all day. But I did want to point out the truckers. And the truckers are, I consider, the first line of defense when it comes to the economy, because I think what's going on here, and we don't get political on our shows too often, but stuff does bother me, so every now and then I do inject my opinion, which is I think what's going on here from a bigger picture, by hook or by crook or by accident, is a small business squeeze. If you've got a small business, you are going down fast. You are trying to figure out ways to hang on. And I got news for you. The truckers, they're like the canary in the coal mine. That they're the symbol that tells us what's going on. So if they're protesting, I'm listening very intently, because truckers are small business owners. A lot of truckers are doing this for their family, so they're family business owners. The truckers, they get to go out and they get to see the world. In fact, 2 months ago, I took a picture and I sent it to a friend of mine and I said, wow, you got to go back in time to see the future. Because I was in some small town in Kansas, in the middle of nowhere, with a population of maybe 20 people, right, at the one gas station in town. And you know what they had outside? Was an Amazon distribution center, like one of those Redbox things, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I went, well, that's the future right there. Well, there you go. There, buy shopping malls. Okay, you just put one of those P.O. boxes at every convenience store or whatever, you know, Dropbox thing. That just takes care of so much. And that's what I see happening right now is we're entering into a new chapter, and I think the truckers see it too.
Yeah, they do. I mean, think about it this way. So many of those people that are in government, to get back to your earlier point, yeah, who are responsible for making these regulations and so on and so forth, they have no experience in the real world. They are lifelong politicians. And look at the way they talk about these truckers and everyone else. You know, flyover country, for example, they think these people are just idiots, stupid people. They're not the elite. They're not politicians. And they're just a bunch of dumb rednecks. But these are the people that actually work and have experience, have families to feed. They're the ones affected by these regulations in a negative way that are coming out of whether it's Canada, Ottawa, there at their parliament, or here in America from Washington, D.C. And look what we have in our government today in America. I mean, Joe Biden has no experience. Bernie Sanders, he's been a politician his entire career. All of these people have never accomplished anything in the private sector. And yet they're the ones sitting here telling us, you know, what to do and how to live our lives when they don't. And think about it, too. You know, whenever they pass something like the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, they exempt themselves from the very policies that they make us live under, which tells us what? Well, it's not good enough for them. And I'm really tired of this attitude from these elitists. And it's funny. I grew up in Democrat circles. I went to an elitist all-male college prep school. I worked in Milan for 2.5 years in fashion. I worked in Hollywood. So I've always been around Democrats, and I've never been seduced by that party or what they claim to be. In fact, my experience has with them has ensured that I would never consider becoming a Democrat, because what I see from so many of those people is this elitist attitude, and they want to tell other people how to live their lives because they think they're smarter than everyone else. And I really reject it. I've got more in common with somebody who works in a coal mine, despite my educational background and work experience, than I do with anybody in Hollywood, anyone in fashion, even many of these doctors and whatnot. And with your cancer story, it's just outrageous. And I think we see the corruption in the medical industry now. These doctors were supposed to trust to make these decisions, and they go through all this education process, but they too are just going by a rule book. They're not thinking outside the box. They're not really trying to diagnose and figure it out. They're just going through a checkbox system. And worse than that, I've talked to nurses who are quitting their jobs because they've been told throughout this pandemic, for example, they know that ivermectin works. They know that hydroxychloroquine and zinc work in terms of treating COVID and diminishing those symptoms and saving lives. But they're being told by the hospital administrators that they're not permitted to prescribe those things because they don't make the hospital's money. I quote from a nurse that told me that, and she was quitting her job because of it. They wanted her to issue these experimental new treatments because they were expensive and they were going to make the hospital money. And that's as corrupt as it can be, because it's not about the money. It's about looking at the individual patient before you and doing what's best to save their life and help them, not to do something to benefit the finance, to line the pockets of the hospitals and so on and so forth. And it's really outrageous, and it's unprincipled, and there's no virtue in it.
Mentioned the word conservative. I think of the church, and I also think of less taxes. So choose your own adventure here, because I haven't heard anything from any church anywhere about whether you want to call it the mark of the beast or whether you, because let's be honest here, where we're going with this is that if you don't have a vaccine card, you might not be able to operate in the barter system. And I was an altar boy. I was a Sunday school teacher. I have read the Bible twice. I did leave the church when I hit the age of reason, but I do have some spirituality. So we'll call it that. I do understand the book of Revelations when it comes to the mark of the beast and all that different stuff. We're living in a day and age where that actually can happen. Like, whether you believe it or not, doesn't matter. We live in a day and age where that actually can happen, where you are not allowed to enter into a bartering system unless you have a vaccine card. That's what these truckers are basically talking about in a different vein. Where's the churches? I haven't heard any church at all step forward on this. They're usually, you know, pretty active with the conservative party.
Well, if you look at the Catholic Church, which is probably the most powerful organization that exists in the spiritual world, just because of its size and the way it's set up with the Pope and everything else, I mean, they are taking the sides of these tyrants, for example. And it's absolutely outrageous to listen to the Pope come out and basically endorse kind of a vaccine mandate system and things like that. And it tells you that these people are not spiritual. They're those very people that make you flee the church because they don't follow the biblical teaching. They have an agenda, and that agenda isn't spiritual. It's not based on any kind of perception of biblical truth and values. It's simply being used as another crutch to serve a narrative or the powers that be. And that was always my problem, too. I am a Christian, but I see with the Democrat Party, for example, the same problems in the church that drive people away. And that's a church that's not welcoming to people, a church that claims to represent all these wonderful values of love and hope and so on and so forth. And in practice, these people don't do it at all. They do the opposite. Same thing with Democrats, the party that claims to be open-minded and tolerant. Well, they want to shut Joe Rogan down because they disagree with his point of view and it threatens their narrative. That's not open-minded. They don't want a debate. And that's what's wrong in this country. We need more and more debate. And as we need more and more of it, they want to shut down all debate.
Another question I would bring out to my friends of the cloth. I used to do a faith magazine and had a faith call-in show and et cetera. So we would tackle some controversial topics within faith-based organizations and et cetera. So if this is too much, just let me know, because I know religion to some is still personal. When it comes to the Bible, they do say that the only time that Jesus Christ showed violence is when he threw the table or flipped the table because the money changers were in the temple. And the thing the government did was they gave the money to Wall Street to distribute as they see fit. And I didn't hear anybody from the church step up and challenge that. And I thought that was, I thought there was a legitimate comparison there. Your thoughts?
Well, I think the church, unfortunately, because it's become more and more secular, it's turned out a bunch of weak men. And I speak about men specifically because I am one. And they produce cowards. They actually bastardized the teaching of the church. They would leave out that story about Jesus. They would act as if, you know, Jesus's message was just to sign off and endorse everything out there. And that's not true. He may have spent his time with prostitutes and other sinners, and we were all sinners, and we are all sinners. None of us are perfect. But Jesus did not endorse it. You know, he spent time and showed these people love while he also spoke about the shortcomings and problems with their behavior or their lack of morality. And, you know, everyone else wants to embrace this turn the other cheek mentality. And that doesn't mean that we give up and we don't stand up. That's what we need right now. You know, the Christian is actually called to go out and proselytize, to go out and speak about the moral authority of God and Jesus Christ, not to simply sit here and do nothing and remain silent when we see abuses happening around us. And so, you know, the church, unfortunately, is largely responsible for producing these weak individuals who misunderstand the Bible's teachings.
As I transition into the conservatives with the liberty portion and the business portion, I do want to just remind us of the last, I believe it was the last non-Christian president, Richard Nixon, who was a Quaker, which is considered quasi-Christian, but they are their own. And the Quakers did teach tolerance. And so the one thing I do appreciate about a lot of different people is tolerance. And I think that's one thing that I think Jesus Christ did try to have. And that's why he was with prostitutes and with, degenerates, because he had tolerance and he learned from that. And much like the Quakers. So, see, I am a little bit schooled in the world of religion and politics and all that different stuff. So let's go to the business world now. Conservatives, that sort of thing. What should we take away from this, whether it's the liberty portion or the business portion? Because really, that's kind of going hand in hand in America. There's a lot of small business owners that are small business owners, so they can continue to have the liberty to raise their children the way that they want to raise their children.
Yeah. I mean, small businesses have been throughout our history the core of this country. The values come from there as well. And what we've seen, though, is a concerted effort by those in government to pretty much eradicate the middle class and shut down these businesses. If you look at what happened throughout the pandemic, what was the result of the lockdowns? You know, your mom and pop shops were shut down. They were considered non-essential, but your big box retailers, your Targets, your Walmarts, and everything else were permitted to stay open. And it was an absolute attack on the middle class. And the family unit as well. I mean, that's under attack too, with all of the the endorsements of transgenderism and everything else too. That's another place where you can have tolerance and understand it, but also not endorse it. Just like if somebody's an alcoholic, I can love that person, but I'm not called to say, hey, I think it's good that you wake up every morning and drink a handle of Jack Daniels, you know? Mm-hmm. That's not what we're called to do. You know, we need to be strong. And we there are certain truths, you know, and we're living in this era, and this is really comes from the Democrat Party and the movement since the 60s, really, to kind of get rid of any kind of black and white morality. And it's really responsible for where we are. I mean, they pulled the Ten Commandments out of schools, you know, long ago. And there's nothing wrong with the Ten Commandments. And that fact, that's what our whole system was built upon.
You know, I think right now, to quote, I don't even know what his politics are, but I know I watched a clip with Dave Chappelle, and what he said actually kind of made sense to me is that his mom told him that, you know, sometimes to live like a lamb, you got to be the lion you are. And I think that's where we're at right now, that for those people right now that they want to be the timid, the lamb, and just enjoy life, well, sometimes you got to step up and be the lion in order to be the lamb that you want to be. And that did strike me. That did connect with me because I do think that's where we're at. And starting to see what's happening in Canada, you know, in America, they're trying, you know, every now and then you get the January 6th, whatever that was all about. And these things happen and it's going to continue. I really do believe that. I believe that it's going to get worse and worse.
Well, it is. And I mean, unless here's the thing,
or better and better
compromise. Yeah. Or better. I mean, look, I believe fundamentally in my heart that America's best days are still ahead. I think that the silver lining in what we're seeing here is the government has exposed itself as the tyrants that they are. We now understand it's out in the open, you know, and we have to confront it. And if you look at what the truckers do in Canada, they've been very successful as well. This is a peaceful movement, and they have already announced that many of these provinces, for example, are dropping vaccine mandates. They're dropping the vaccine passports, and so they are actually having success. And now the strategy from, you know, Justin Trudeau and the tyrants there is to label these people a dangerous movement to try and get them to stop and to mischaracterize them because they couldn't stop it from starting. And they're scared. That's what it comes down to. We are seeing those in government shaking in their boots finally, and that's the way it has to be. They should fear us. They need to fear us. I don't know if it was James Madison, but one of the founding fathers, you know, suggested that, you know, basically, you know, speaking of your lamb and lion analogy, you know, if we want to live in peace and everything like that, the government must fear us.
You got time for one more, about 5 minutes?
Yeah. Great.
I wanted to ask you about climate change. You're from Texas, so, you know, by osmosis, you grew up in, you know, oil country. And now you're in Napa Valley. And I did magazines in Napa Valley, San Mateo, and East Bay there in Oakland on the Danbury in some of the nicer suburbs areas. So I'm familiar with where you're at. And it's, yeah, it's mixed up there, but it's definitely a little more blue. Let's put it that way. And, you know, Texas, definitely more red. And we've gotten to the point where climate change has become very political instead of science-based. And you're in your 30s. So I'm curious to know, you know, your journey, your opinions, your thoughts when it comes to oil, gas, climate change, that sort of thing. Because I'm, you know, that's not what this interview is about. So I'm curious, you know, just you as a person, you know, as an expert, as an individual that uses fossil fuels on a regular basis.
Yeah, well, I mean, climate change, I'll say it, it's a hoax. It really is, you know. If you go back and look at the 60s and 70s, they were warning of an apocalypse because of freezing temperatures. They claimed that the Earth was cooling and that, you know, we were all going to die because of, you know, a nuclear winter. And then they changed their tune suddenly and they realized, oh, actually, it's warming now. So then they changed it to global warming. And of course, now you have some winters that are really cold. You have some hot days. So they just call it climate change. The idea that man is somehow responsible for all temperature changes. And if you think about it on its surface, it's absolutely absurd. 50 million years ago, for example, up in Antarctica, you had palm trees and crocodiles. And that was long before man made its unnatural presence known on this earth. And so it was a way more severe conditions even before we were around. And the truth is the climate does change. But to argue that we're responsible for it is an absolute lie and defies science. And the data they're using to argue that the climate is warming is based on 100, let's see, we have surface temperature data going back to the 1880s. That's it. So the Earth is 4.54 billion years old. So based on the 1880s to today, out of a 4.54 billion year history, they claim that that is definitive proof that man and fossil fuels and the Industrial Revolution is responsible for climate change. That is, there's more evidence of spontaneous combustion.
Yeah, it's definitely the Earth goes through changes. It's called Earth changes. And the thing that really frustrates me when it comes to climate change is I actually believe the sun is the number one contributor and connector and you name it. But whatever happens on the sun is what happens here. And number two would probably be what our choices are for land use as humans. Three would probably be carbon. I don't think the carbon is as catastrophic as people say it is, but I know I'm in the minority on that.
Well, I don't think that you are in the minority. I think that it's another situation where the media, because it has such a powerful voice, they try to convince you that you're some kind of conspiracy theorist and fool. Like they try to convince me of that. And it's not true. I think we're in the majority. And the problem is, you know, they try to shut us up and not engage in any debate, right? They say the science is settled. So we're not allowed to have the conversation we're having now, which we're making, I think, very astute points. And no Democrat or person who really believes in man-made climate change has ever entertained any of these questions that we're asking now. You know, is 141 years of surface temperature data out of 4.54 billion years, is that really a good set of data points to determine that we're responsible for it? How do you explain 50 million years ago that Antarctica looked like Florida? Okay, so, but they don't ask these questions. That's part of the problem. They just take it because somebody has the label of a scientist. And by the way, these people have never gotten anything right. They are 0 for 1,000 batting right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, they predicted that New York was going to be underwater, that the Maldives were going to be gone. Every prediction they've ever made has been wrong. And it's all to create hysteria, much like they did with COVID. And that's the point. But it's really about control, because if they can basically get rid of fossil fuels and eliminate our way of life and our freedom and everything else, it makes us all dependent on the government. And of course, you know, if you look at these politicians who are yelling and screaming about climate change, they have no problem flying on their own private jets, going about their business with an armada of SUVs behind them and pollutants. They build their homes on the sea, buy their homes on the sea where they claim, you know, it's unsafe to do so. So they don't believe this stuff.
Yeah, it's too bad more people don't follow the science instead of the politics and the attorneys, because I don't think politicians and lawyers should be involved in the science laboratories. I just don't. But
No. And there are countless scientists, by the way, that outnumber even the ones that they quote for climate change and say, no, this is not true. But they just discredit them, just like they do with the doctors that came out and said, you know, ivermectin works, for example. They say, oh, well, even though that person went to Stanford and he's brilliant, well, because he's not towing the line and saying what we want the narrative to be, well, he's not a real doctor.
I still got some scientists from 10 years ago I challenged. I've never heard from again. By scientists, I mean politicians and lobbyists and et cetera, because I used to bring climate change people on my program all the time when I would do a night show. And I would, you know, let them talk. And then I'd basically end with pretty close to the same question, which is, I'll tell you what, if I give you a 5-pound weight and you drop it off of the Seattle Space Needle, how quickly will it hit the ground? And I guarantee you, if you give that equation to a half a dozen laboratories across the world, and they don't know it, and they all do their own independent individual research, and you answer their questions about the wind and a few other temperature variations, and if they want to know moisture, that's fine. But what they're going to come back with is almost an identical answer for all six. Now, if you ask those six same think tanks, all six across the world, what the climate is going to be in 10 years, or even what the temperature is going to be in 2 years, they will not even come close. They won't even know how to come up with that. And we're supposed to give away our liberties and trillions of dollars to a bunch of people that are playing a board game and a video game? Because that's what they're doing. That's what these government workers are doing. They're acting like they're playing a video game with endless credits. And it is, I mean, I'm about done with it.
Yeah. Well, they're robbing us. And I always say, you know, the reality is the tyranny that we're experiencing today in America is actually far greater than that experienced by the founding fathers. We went to war over lesser grievances than we've experienced today under our government. And I'm not promoting violence. That's not my intention. But it's to get people to wake up to the fact that what's happening right now is very severe. It's very wrong. It's un-American. And we're watching our country slip away before our eyes. But like I said, I think people are waking up and stepping up to the plate. You know, I'm evidence of that, too. Mm-hmm. You know, I got involved because I couldn't take it anymore.
And that was why I wanted to bring up the science example with climate change, is that, listen, understand the science first before you get emotional, because I do think part of the design is the environment is very inviting for your emotions. I can connect with the environment. I got history and great memories being outside. So it's very easy. There's an original sin even comparison where humans came in and we've destroyed the Garden of Eden. So there's a lot of emotion attached to the environment. So that's the first reason why I wanted to point that out. But also, I want people just to take a step back and ask yourself, have the people in office for the last 30 to 40 years, has their life gotten significantly better, and has yours? And what I mean by that is, and I'm not picking on President Biden, he just happens to be the president. And if you go back and take a look at his career, it started in the late 70s, and he was one of the ones that reinvented regulation to allow coal. 30 years later, he reimagined regulation to shut it down, and he profited the whole time, and he didn't have any risk or any skin in the game at all. And there's a lot of people that have been getting money from the government and from lobbyist groups and et cetera that don't have skin in the game that are making a lot of money on it. That's my point. And I think people are starting to wake up to that more than anything.
Yeah. I mean, we're being ruled by children who are the least intelligent amongst us. You know, they only play the political game. And you're right. They make a lot of emotional arguments because they actually can't make the case for what they're trying to do to this country. Because if they ever had to debate somebody, they would lose. And it would be revealed very quickly that their intentions are not noble. They're not good. And that's what people have to understand in this country, too. You know, it used to be that, yeah, maybe the Democrat Party and Republican Party had differences of opinions about policies. But at the end of the day, they had the interests of America at heart. That's not the case anymore. And don't get me wrong. There are plenty of Republicans who are guilty as well. Your Mitch McConnells and so on and so forth that are just as bad as any Democrat. But as far as a party goes, the Democratic Party is the greatest threat to this nation. And it's coming from inside, not outside. That's the greatest enemy we face. I mean, all their policies are designed, and you can go and read books. I mean, I'm not making conspiracy theories. It's out there in the open. You can read Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals. He was a great Democrat strategist that Hillary Clinton worshipped, and Barack Obama celebrated the book, and these people studied that, and that's their playbook. And the point of that was to foment a revolution to bring about communism and Marxism in America. And if you study that book, that's what they use, and the tactics are there. And so you don't have to be sitting here wondering, why is this happening? Because they've told us.
Drew, I really appreciate the time, and I want to give you an opportunity to plug your podcast as we kind of wrap up here. And kind of give, you know, accentuate your point a little bit to, you know, one of the strategies in Karl Marx's playbook is to, you know, go work at a factory, but only make 5 widgets an hour instead of 10. And then pretty soon you start getting your coworkers to only make 5 widgets an hour instead of 10 as well. That's part of the strategy for Karl Marx and that sort of thing. So I just want to point that out, first of all. And secondly, one of the things that we did want to talk about today was the underlying fascism that is happening. So whether we're talking about Democrats or whether we're talking about Republicans, or it doesn't even matter. What we're talking about is business getting a little too close with government so that they can together dictate our lives. That's at least kind of what I thought was the main point of a lot of this. Now, 10 years ago, we mentioned Ron Paul's name earlier. Ron Paul was on Tim Russert's show, and he started talking about an ushering in of soft fascism in the same way that Eisenhower talked about the military-industrial complex. So as we kind of wrap up, I just wanted to kind of bring that home a little bit, because I know that was a big important part that you wanted to point out, was that word fascism. Am I wrong on that, or am I right?
No, you're exactly right. You're exactly right. I mean, it is fascism. I mean, it's a longer debate talking about fascism versus communism. But at the end of the day, they're all totalitarian groups. Its intention basically is to create a one-party system that rules over, a citizenry. And that's what we're seeing happen here. And you're right. You know, the government, as George Washington warned in his farewell address, is using essentially businesses now to bring about those things that they're unable to do legally and lawfully from the government. So they're actually weaponizing our own industries and companies to do that for them. And it's a scary time, and we just have to be aware of it. And that's kind of step one.
Well, make sure we give your podcast a plug here as we conclude. I really liked the fact that you would break down even the republic and democracy and all that different stuff, because people forget we're a republic, not a democracy. Yeah. We are a republic, which is individualism, and we are a group of individuals that make up a country. That's what we are founded on, and I think people forget that.
Yeah, they do. They do. Yeah, we're a constitutional republic, and direct democracy is actually a very dangerous thing. It didn't work in Greece. It didn't work wherever it's been tried, because the whims of a population and the emotions can make poor decisions that fundamentally transform the country. So everyone's got skin in the game. So that's why we have it.
Do you know the history behind democracy? Actually, where how it started was actually to take out a dictator, because it was the only way it would work. And so democracy is actually a mob. It's a mob. And so
it is.
And so I always laughed when I always heard democracy is good, because I'm going, no, actually democracy is for taking out a dictator is the only time it's good. Otherwise you just have a mob ruling. That's it.
Yep.
It's just so high. Anyway, that's for a different day. And hey, I really appreciated your candor and your podcast pronunciation, if you will. I don't know. I'm trying to figure out a few ways to end this, but I appreciate your time today and just your very frank conversation. It was good.
Well, it's my pleasure. I love having the opportunity to talk and talk through these issues and give people an opportunity to just be exposed to some other thought, you know, and people can take what they will from it and hopefully be more educated than they were before. And yeah, I mean, if people are interested and they like it, you know, they can listen to my podcast, The Drew Allen Show. And then all my writings and things like that, they get published. I have a Substack. It's drewallen.substack.com. They can subscribe there and get notified when I have a new article out.